dead? All dead, Balonda said. Basmali, favourite student of the old Bashar Teg, gone and nothing gained by it. Lambaras, the marvellous library, the brilliant teachers, the premier students, all gone. Even Lucilla? Odrade asked. The Reverend Mother Lucilla, vice-chancellor of Lambaras, had been instructed to flee at the first sign of trouble, taking with her as many of the doomed as she could store in other memory. The spies said all dead, Balonda insisted. It was a chilling signal to surviving Bene Gesserit. You may be next. How could any human society be anesthetized to such brutality, Odrade wondered. She visualized the news with breakfast at some honored Matre base. We've destroyed another Bene Gesserit planet. 10 billion dead, they say. That makes 6 planets this month, doesn't it? Pass the cream, will you, dear? Almost glassy-eyed with horror, Odrade picked up the report and glanced through it. From the rabbi, no doubt of that. She put it down gently and looked at her counselors. Belonda, old, fat, and florid. Mentat archivist, wearing lenses to read now, uncaring what that revealed about her. Belonda showed her blunt teeth and a wide grimace that said more than words. She had seen Odrade's reaction to the report. Bell might argue once more for retaliation in kind. That could be expected from someone valued for her natural viciousness. She needed to be thrown back into Mentat mode where she would be more analytical. In her own way, Bell is right, Odrade thought. But she won't like what I have in mind. I must be cautious in what I say now. Too soon to reveal my plan. There are circumstances where viciousness can blunt viciousness, Odrade said. We must consider it carefully. There, that would forestall Bell's outburst. Tamerlane shifted slightly in her chair. Odrade looked at the older woman. Tam, composed there behind her mask of critical patience, snowy hair above that narrow face, the appearance of aged wisdom. Odrade saw through the mask to Tam's extreme severity, the pose that said she disliked everything she saw and heard. In contrast to the surface softness of Belle's flesh, there was a bony solidity to Tamerlane. She still kept herself in trim, her muscles well-toned as possible. In her eyes, though, was the thing that belied this, a sense of withdrawing there, pulling back from life. Oh, she observed yet, but something had begun the final retreat. Tamerlane's famed intelligence had become a kind of shrewdness, relying mostly on past observations and past decisions, rather than on what she saw in the immediate present. We must begin readying a replacement. It will be Shiana, I think. Shiana is dangerous to us, but shows great promise. And Shiana was blooded on Dune. Odrade focused on Tamerlane's shaggy eyebrows. They tended to hang over her lids in a concealing disarray. Yes, Shiana to replace Tamerlane. Knowing the complicated problems they must solve, Tam would accept the decision. At the moment of announcement, Odrade knew she would only have to turn Tam's attention to the enormity of their predicament. I will miss her, damn it.
You cannot know history unless you know how leaders move with its currents. Every leader requires outsiders to perpetuate his leadership. Examine my career. I was leader and outsider. Do not assume I merely created a church state. That was my function as leader, and I copied historical models. Barbaric arts of my time reveal me as outsider. Favorite poetry? Epics. Popular dramatic ideal? Heroism. Dancers? Wildly abandoned. Stimulants to make people sense what I took from them. What did I take? The right to choose a role in history. Leto II, The Tyrant. Vether Beeb Translation.
I am going to die, Lucilla thought. Please, dear sisters, don't let it come before I pass along the precious burden I carry in my mind. Sisters. The idea of family seldom was expressed among the Bene Gesserit, but it was there. In a genetic sense, they were related, and because of other memory, they often knew where. They had no need for special terms such as second cousin or great aunt. They saw the relationships as a weaver sees his cloth. They knew how the warp and weft created the fabric. A better word than family. It was the fabric of the Bene Gesserit that formed the sisterhood. But it was the ancient instinct of family that provided the warp. Lucilla thought of her sisters only as family now. The family needed what she carried. I was a fool to seek refuge on Gamu. But her damaged no-ship would limp no farther. How diabolically extravagant honored Matras had been. The hatred this implied terrified her. Strewing the escape lanes around Lampardus with death traps, the fold space perimeter seeded with small no-globes, each containing a field projector and laser gun to fire on contact. When the laser hit the Holtzmann generator in the no-globe, a chain reaction released the nuclear energy. Bzzz into the trap field, and a devastating explosion spread silently across you. Costly, but efficient. Enough such explosions, and even a giant guild ship would become a crippled derelict in the void. Her ship's system of defensive analyses had penetrated the nature of the trap only when it was too late, but she had been lucky, she supposed. She did not feel lucky as she looked out of the second-story window of this isolated Gamu farmhouse. The window was open, and an afternoon breeze carried the inevitable smell of oil, something dirty in the smoke of a fire out there. The Harkonnens had left their oily mark on this planet so deep it might never be removed. Her contact here was a retired Sook doctor, but she knew him as much more. Something so secret that only a limited number in the Bene Gesserit shared it. The knowledge lay in a special classification, the secrets of which we do not speak, even among ourselves, for that would harm us. The secrets we do not pass from sister to sister in the sharing of lives, for there is no open path. The secrets we dare not know until a need arises. Lucilla had stumbled into it because of a veiled remark by Odraid. You know an interesting thing about Gamu? There's a whole society there that bans itself on the basis that they all eat consecrated foods. A custom brought in by immigrants who have never been assimilated, keep to themselves, frown on outbreeding, that sort of thing. They ignite the usual mythic detritus, of course, whispers, rumours. Serves to isolate them even more, precisely what they want. Lucilla knew of an ancient society that fitted itself neatly into this description. She was curious. The society she had in mind supposedly had died out shortly after the second interspace migrations. Judicious browsing in archives whetted her curiosity even more. Living styles, rumour-fogged descriptions of religious rituals, especially the candelabra, and the keeping of special holy days with a proscription against any work on those days. And they were not just on Gamu. One morning, taking advantage of an uncommon lull, Lucilla entered the workroom to test her projective surmise, something not as reliable as a Mentat's equivalent, but more than theory. You have a new assignment for me, I suspect. I see you've been spending time in archives. It seemed a profitable thing to do just now. Making connections. A surmise. That secret society on Gamu. They're Jews, aren't they? You may have need of special information because of where we are about to post you. Extremely casual. Lucilla sank into Belonda's chair dog without invitation. Odraid picked up a stylus, scribbled on a sheet of disposable, and passed it to Lucilla in a way that hid it from the calm eyes. Lucilla took the hint and bent over the message, holding it close beneath the shield of her head. Your surmise is correct. You must die before revealing it. That is the price of their cooperation, a mark of great trust. Lucilla shredded the message. O'Drade used eye and palm identification to unseal a panel on the wall behind her. She removed a small Redulian crystal and handed it to Lucilla. It was warm, but Lucilla felt a chill. What could be so secret? O'Drade swung the security hood from beneath her work table and pivoted it into position. Lucilla dropped the crystal into its receptacle with a trembling hand and pulled the hood over her head. Immediately, words formed in her mind, an oral sense of extremely old accents clipped for recognition. The people to whom your attention has been called are the Jews. They made a defensive decision eons ago. The solution to recurrent pogroms was to vanish from public view. Space travel made this not only possible, but attractive. They hid on countless planets, their own scattering, and they probably have planets where only their people live. This does not mean they have abandoned age-old practices in which they excelled out of survival necessity. The old religion is sure to persist, even though somewhat altered. It is probable that a rabbi from ancient times would not find himself out of place behind the Sabbath menorah of a Jewish household in your age. But their secrecy is such that you could work a lifetime beside a Jew and never suspect. They call it complete cover, although they know its dangers. Lucilla accepted this without question. That which was so secret would be perceived as dangerous by anyone who even suspected its presence. Else why do they keep it secret, eh? Answer me that. The crystal continued to pour its secrets into her awareness. At the threat of discovery, they have a standard reaction. We seek the religion of our roots. It is a revival, bringing back what is best from our past. Lucilla knew this pattern. There were always nutty revivalists. It was guaranteed to blunt most curiosity. Them, oh, they're another bunch of revivalists. The masking system, the crystal continued, did not succeed with us. We have our own well-recorded Jewish heritage and a fund of other memory to tell us reasons for secrecy. We did not disturb the situation until I, Mother Superior, during and after the Battle of Corin, very old indeed, saw that our sisterhood had need of a secret society, a group responsive to our requests for assistance. Lucilla felt a surge of skepticism. Requests. The long ago Mother Superior had anticipated skepticism. On occasion, we make demands they cannot avoid, but they make demands on us as well. Lucilla felt immersed in the mystique of this underground society. It was more than ultra-secret. Her clumsy questions in archives had elicited mostly rejections. Jews? What's that? Oh yes, an ancient sect. Look it up for yourself. We don't have time for idle religious research. The crystal had more to impart. Jews are amused and sometimes dismayed at what they interpret as our copying them. Our breeding records dominated by the female line to control the mating pattern are seen as Jewish. You are only a Jew if your mother was a Jew. The crystal came to its conclusion. The diaspora will be remembered. Keeping this secret involves our deepest honor. Lucilla lifted the hood from her head. You are a very good choice for an extremely touchy assignment on Lampardas, O'Drade had said, restoring the crystal to its hiding place. That is past, and likely dead. Look where O'Drade's touchy assignment has brought me. From her vantage in the Garmu farmhouse, Lucilla noted a large produce carrier had entered the grounds. There was a bustle of activity below her. Workers came from all sides to meet the big carrier with tow bins of vegetables. She smelled the pungent juices from the cut stems of marrows. Lucilla did not move from the window.
Her host had supplied her with local garments, a long gown of drab grey everwear and a bright blue headscarf to confine her sandy hair. It was important to do nothing calling undue attention to herself. She had seen other women pause to watch the farm work. Her presence here could be taken as curiosity. It was a large carrier, its suspensors labouring under the load of produce already piled in its articulated sections. The operators stood in a transparent house at the front, hands on the steering lever, eyes straight ahead. His legs were spread wide and he leaned into the web of sloping supports, touching the power bar with his left hip. He was a large man, face dark and deeply wrinkled, hair laced with grey. His body was an extension of the machinery, guiding ponderous movement. He flicked his gaze up to Lucilla as he passed, then back to the track into the wide loading area defined by buildings below her. Built into his machine, she thought. That said something about the way humans were fitted to the things they did. Lucilla sensed a weakening force in this thought. If you fitted yourself too tightly to one thing, other abilities atrophied. We become what we do. She pictured herself suddenly as another operator in some great machine, no different from that man and the carrier. The big machine trundled past her out of the yard, its operator not sparing her another glance. He had seen her once, why look twice? Her hosts had made a wise choice in this hiding place, she thought. A sparsely populated area with trustworthy workers in the immediate vicinity and little curiosity among the people who passed. Hard work dulled curiosity. She had noted the character of the area when she was brought here. Evening then, and people already trudging toward their homes. You could measure the urban density of an area by when work stopped. Early to bed, and you were in a loosely packed region. Night activity said people remained restless, twitchy with inner awareness of others active and vibrating too near. What has brought me to this introspective state? Early in the sisterhood's first retreat, before the worst onslaughts of the honoured matras, Lucilla had experienced difficulty coming to grips with belief that someone out there is hunting us with intent to kill. Pogrom. That was what the rabbi had called it before going off that morning. To see what I can do for you. She knew the rabbi had chosen his word from long and bitter memory, but not since her first experience of Garmu before this pogrom had Lucilla felt such confinement to circumstances she could not control. I was a fugitive then, too. The sisterhood's present situation bore similarities to what they had suffered under the tyrant, except that the god emperor, obviously, in retrospect, never intended to exterminate the Bene Gesserit, only to rule them, and he certainly ruled. Where is that damned rabbi? He was a large, intense man with old-fashioned spectacles, a broad face browned by much sunlight. Few wrinkles despite the age she could read in his voice and movements. The spectacles focused attention on deeply set brown eyes that watched her with peculiar intensity. "Honoured matras," he had said, right here in this bare-walled upper room, when she explained her predicament. "Oh my, that is difficult." Lucilla had expected that response, and what was more, she could see he knew it. "There is a guild navigator on Garmu helping the search for you," he said. "It is one of the Edrics. Very powerful, I am told." "I have Siona blood. He cannot see me."
"Nor me, nor any of my people, and for the same reason. We Jews adjust to many necessities, you know."
"This Edric is a gesture," she said. "He can do little."
"But they have brought him. I'm afraid there is no way we can get you safely off the planet."
"Then what can we do?"
"We will see. My people are not entirely helpless, you understand."
She recognized sincerity and concern for her. He spoke quietly of resisting the sexual blandishments of honored matras, doing it unobtrusively so as not to arouse them. "I will go whisper in a few ears," he said. She felt oddly restored by this. There often was something coldly remote and cruel about falling into the hands of the medical professions. She reassured herself with the knowledge that souks were conditioned to be alert to your needs, compassionate and supportive. All of those things can fall by the wayside in emergencies. She bent her efforts to restoring calm, focusing on the personal mantra she had gained in solo death education. If I am to die, I must pass along a transcendental lesson. I must leave with serenity. That helped, but still she felt a trembling. The rabbi had been gone too long. Something was wrong. Was I right to trust him? Despite a growing sense of doom, Lucilla forced herself to practice Bene Gesserit naivete as she reviewed her encounter with the rabbi. Her proctors had called this the innocence that goes naturally with inexperience, a condition often confused with ignorance. Into this naivete all things flowed. It was close to mentat performance. Information entered without prejudgment. You are a mirror upon which the universe is reflected. That reflection is all you experience. Images bounce from your senses. Hypotheses arise. Important even when wrong. Here is the exceptional case where more than one wrong can produce dependable decisions. We are your willing servants, the rabbi had said. That was guaranteed to alert a reverend mother. The explanations of O'Drade's crystal felt suddenly inadequate. It's almost always profit. She accepted this as cynical, but from vast experience. Attempts to weed it out of human behavior always broke up on the rocks of application. Socializing and communistic systems only changed the counters that measured profits. Enormous managerial bureaucracies, the counter was power. Lucilla warned herself that the manifestations were always the same. Look at this rabbi's extensive farm, retirement retreat for a souk. She had seen something of what lay behind the establishment, servants, richer quarters, and there must be more. No matter the system, it was always the same. The best foods, beautiful lovers, unrestricted travel, magnificent holiday accommodations. It gets very tiresome when you've seen it as often as we have. She knew her mind was jittering, but felt powerless to prevent it. Survival. The very bottom of the demand system is always survival. And I threaten the survival of the rabbi and his people. He had fawned upon her. Always beware of those who fawn upon us, nuzzling up to all of that power we're supposed to have. How flattering to find great mobs of servants waiting and anxious to do our bidding. How utterly debilitating. The mistake of honored matras. What is delaying the rabbi? Was he seeing how much he could get for the Reverend Mother Lucilla? A door slammed below, shaking the floor under her feet. She heard hurried footsteps on a stairway. How primitive these people were. Stairways. Lucilla turned as the door opened. The rabbi entered, bringing a rich smell of mélange. He stood by the door, assessing her mood. Forgive my tardiness, dear lady. I was summoned for questioning by Edric, the guild navigator. That explained the smell of spice. Navigators were forever bathed in the orange gas of mélange, their features often fogged by the vapors. Lucilla could visualize the navigator's tiny V of a mouth and the ugly flap of nose. Mouth and nose appeared small on a navigator's gigantic face with its pulsing temples. She knew how threatened the rabbi must have felt listening to the sing-song ululations of the navigator's voice with its simultaneous mech translation into impersonal Gaelic. What did he want? You? Does he? He does not know for sure, but I am certain he suspects us. However, he suspects everybody. Did they follow you? Not necessary. They can find me any time they want.
What shall we do?
She knew she spoke too fast, much too loud. Dear lady. He came 3 steps closer and she saw the perspiration on his forehead and nose. Fear. She could smell it.
Well, what is it?
The economic view behind the activities of honored Matras. We find them quite interesting.
His words crystallized her fears. I knew it. He's selling me out.
As you reverend mothers know very well, there are always gaps in economic systems.
Yes, profoundly wary.
Incomplete suppression of trade in any commodity always increases the profits of the tradesmen, especially the profits of senior distributors.
His voice was warningly hesitant.
That is the fallacy of thinking you can control unwanted narcotics by stopping them at your borders.
What was he trying to tell her? His words described elementary facts known even to acolytes. Increased profits were always used to buy safe paths past border guards, often by buying the guards themselves. Has he bought servants of the honored Matras? Surely he doesn't believe he can do that safely.
She waited while he composed his thoughts, obviously forming a presentation he believed most likely to gain her acceptance.
Why did he point her attention toward border guards?
That certainly was what he had done. Guards always had a ready rationalization for betraying their superiors, of course. If I don't, someone else will.
She dared to hope.
The rabbi cleared his throat. It was apparent he had found the words he wanted and had placed them in order. I do not believe there is any way to get you off Gamu alive.
She had not expected such a blunt condemnation.
But the information you carry, that is a different matter, he said.
So that was behind all of the focusing on borders and guards. You don't understand, Rabbi. My information is not just a few words and some warnings. She tapped a finger against her forehead. In here are many precious lives, all of those irreplaceable experiences, learning so vital that,
but I do understand, dear lady. Our problem is that you do not understand.
Always these references to understanding.
It is your honor upon which I depend at this moment, he said.
The legendary honesty and trustworthiness of the Bene Gesserit when we have given our word. You know I will die rather than betray you, she said.
He spread his hands wide in a rather helpless gesture. I am fully confident of that, dear lady. The question is not one of betrayal, but of something we have never before revealed to your sisterhood.
What are you trying to tell me?
Quite peremptory, almost with voice, which she had been warned not to try on these Jews. I must exact a promise from you. I must have your word that you will not turn against us because of what I am about to reveal. You must promise to accept my solution to our dilemma.
Sight unseen?
Only because I ask it of you, and assure you that we honor our commitment to your sisterhood.
She glared at him, trying to see through this barrier he had erected between them. His surface reactions could be read, but not the mysterious thing beneath his unexpected behavior.
The rabbi waited for this fearsome woman to reach her decision. Reverend Mothers always made him uneasy. He knew what her decision must be, and pitied her. He saw that she could read the pity in his expression. They knew so much and so little. Their powers were manifest, and their knowledge of secret Israel so perilous. We owe them this debt, though. She is not of the chosen, but a debt is a debt. Honor is honor. Truth is truth. The Bene Gesserit had preserved secret Israel in many hours of need, and a pogrom was something his people knew without lengthy explanations. Pogrom was embedded in the psyche of secret Israel. And thanks to the unspeakable, the chosen people would never forget. No more than they could forgive.
Memory kept fresh in daily ritual, with periodic emphasis in communal sharings, cast a glowing halo on what the rabbi knew he must do. And this poor woman, she too was trapped by memories and circumstances. Into the cauldron, both of us.
You have my word, Lucilla said. The rabbi returned to the room's only door and opened it. An older woman in a long brown gown stood there. She stepped in at the rabbi's beckoning gesture, hair the colour of old driftwood neatly bound in a bun at the back of her head, face pinched in and wrinkled, dark as a dried almond. Eyes, though, total blue, and that steely hardness within them.
This is Rebecca, one of our people, the rabbi said. As I am sure you can see, she has done a dangerous thing.
The agony, Lucilla whispered.
She did it long ago, and she serves us well. Now she will serve you.
Lucilla had to be certain. Can you share?
I have never done it, lady, but I know it.
As Rebecca spoke, she approached Lucilla and stopped when they were almost touching. They leaned toward each other until their foreheads made contact. Their hands went out and gripped the offered shoulders. As their minds locked, Lucilla forced a projective thought. This must get to my sisters.
I promise, dear lady.
There could be no deception in this total mixing of minds, this ultimate candor powered by imminent and certain death, or the poisonous melange essence that ancient Fremen had rightly called the Little Death. Lucilla accepted Rebecca's promise. This wild reverend mother of the Jews committed her life to the assurance. Something else. Lucilla gasped as she saw it. The rabbi intended to sell her to the honored Matras. The driver of the produce carrier had been one of their agents come to confirm that there was indeed a woman of Lucilla's description at the farmhouse. Rebecca's candor gave Lucilla no escape. It is the only way we can save ourselves and maintain our credibility. So that was why the rabbi had made her think of guards and power brokers. Clever, clever. And I accept it, as he knew I would.
You cannot manipulate a marionette with only one string. The Zensoni whip.
The Reverend Mother Shiana stood at her sculpting stand, a grey-clawed shaper covering each hand like exotic gloves. The black sensiplas on the stand had been taking form under her hands for almost an hour. She felt herself close to the creation that sought realization, surging from a wild place within her. The intensity of the creative force made her skin tremble, and she wondered that passers-by in the hall to her right did not sense it. The north window of her workroom admitted grey light behind her, and the western window glowed orange with a desert sunset. Presta, Shiana's senior assistant here at the Desert Watch Station, had paused in the doorway a few minutes ago, but the entire station complement knew better than to interrupt Shiana at this work. Stepping back, Shiana brushed a strand of sun-streaked brown hair from her forehead with the back of her hand. The black plaid stood in front of her like a challenge, its curves and planes almost fitted to the form she sensed within her. I come here to create when my fears are greatest, she thought. This thought dampened the creative surge, and she redoubled her efforts to complete the sculpture. Her shaper-clad hands dipped and swooped over the plaz, and black shape followed each intrusion like a wave driven by an insane wind. The light from the north window faded, and the automatics compensated with a yellow-grey glow from the ceiling edges, but it was not the same. It was not the same. Shiana stepped back from her work. Close, but not close enough. She could almost touch the form within her and feel it striving for birth. But the plaz was not right.
One sweeping stroke of her right hand reduced it to a black blob on the stand. Damn. She stripped off the shapers and dropped them to the shelf beside the sculpting stand. The horizon out the western window still carried a strip of orange, fading fast, the way she felt the fading of her creative surge. Striding to the sunset window, she was in time to see the last of the day's search teams return. Their landing lights were firefly darts off to the south, where a temporary flat had been established in the path of the advancing dunes. She could see from the slow way the thropters came down that they had found no spice blows or other signs that sandworms were at last developing from the sand trout planted here. I am a shepherd to worms that may never come. The window gave back to her a dark reflection of her features. She could see where the spice agony had left its marks. The slender, brown-skinned waif of dune had become a tall, rather austere woman, but her brown hair still insisted on escaping the tight coif at the nape of her neck, and she could see the wildness in her all-blue eyes. Others could see it too, and that was the problem, source of some of her fears. There appeared to be no stopping the Missionaria in its preparations for our Shiana. If the giant sandworms developed, Shai Halud returned, and the Missionaria Protectiva of the Bene Gesserit was ready to launch her onto an unsuspecting humanity prepared for religious adoration. The myth become real, just the way she tried to make that sculpture back there a reality. Holy Shiana. The God Emperor is her thrall. See how the sacred sandworms obey her. Leto is returned. Would it influence the honored Matras? Probably. They gave at least lip service to the God Emperor in his name of Gulda. Not likely they would follow Holy Shiana's lead, except in the matter of sexual exploits. Shiana knew her own sexual behavior, outrageous even by Bene Gesserit standards, was a form of protest against this role the Missionaria tried to impose on her. The excuse that she only polished the males trained in sexual bondage by Duncan Hideho was just that, an excuse. Belonda suspects. Mentat Bell was a constant danger to sisters who got out of line. And that was a major reason Bell held her powerful position in the High Council of the Sisterhood. Shiana turned away from the window and flung herself onto the orange and umber spread covering her cot. Directly in front of her, a large black and white drawing of a giant worm poised above a tiny human figure. That's the way they were and may never be again. What was I trying to say with that drawing? If I knew, I might be able to complete the Plaz sculpture. It had been perilous to develop a secret hand talk with Duncan. But there were things the Sisterhood could not know. Not yet. There might be a way of escape for both of us. But where could they go? It was a universe beset by honored Matras and other forces. It was a universe of scattered planets peopled mostly by humans who wanted only to live out their lives in peace, accepting Bene Gesserit guidance in some places, squirming under honored Matra suppression in many regions, mostly hoping to govern themselves as best they could, the perennial dream of democracy. And then there were always the unknowns, and always the lesson of the honored Matras. Mabella's clues said fish speakers and reverend mothers in extremis formed the honored Matras. Fish speaker democracy became honored Matra autocracy. The clues were too numerous to ignore. But why had they emphasized unconscious compulsions with their T-probes, cellular induction, and sexual prowess? Where is the market to accept our fugitive talents? This universe no longer possessed a single boss. A species of subterranean webworks could be defined. It was extremely loose, based on old compromises and temporary agreements. O'Drade had once said, "It resembles an old garment with frayed edges and patched holes." Choam's tightly bound trading network of the old empire was no more. Now it was fearful bits and pieces held together by the loosest of ties.
People treated this patched thing with contempt, longing always for the good old days. What kind of a universe would accept us merely as fugitives, and not as the sacred Shiana with her consort? Not that Duncan was a consort. That had been the Bene Gesserit's original plan. Bond Shiana to Duncan. We control him, and he can control her. Mabella cut that plan short. And a good thing for both of us. Who needs a sexual obsession? But Shiana was forced to admit she harbored oddly confused feelings about Duncan Idaho. The hand talks, the touching. And what could they say to O'Draid when she came prying? Not if, but when. We talk about ways for Duncan and Mabella to escape you, Mother Superior. We talk about other ways to restore Teg's memories. We talk about our own private rebellion against the Bene Gesserit. Yes, Darwi O'Draid, your former student has become a rebel against you. Shiana admitted to mixed feelings about Mabella as well. She domesticated Duncan where I might have failed. The captive honored Matre was a fascinating study, and amusing at times. There was her joking doggerel posted on the wall of the ship's acolyte dining room. Hey, God, I hope you're there. I want you to hear my prayer. That graven image on my shelf. Is it really you, or just myself? Well, anyway, here it goes. Please keep me on my toes. Help me past my worst mistakes, doing it for both our sakes, for an example of perfection to the proctors of my section, or merely for the heaven of it, like bread for the leaven of it. For whatever reason may incline, please act for yours and mine. The subsequent confrontation with O'Draid, caught by the calm eyes, had been a beautiful thing to watch. O'Draid's voice oddly strident. Mabella, you! I'm afraid so. No contrition in her at all. Afraid so? Still strident. Why not? Quite defiant. You joke about the Missionaria. Don't protest. That was your intent. They're so damned pretentious. Shiana could only sympathize as she reflected on that confrontation. Rebellious Mabella was a symptom. What ferments until you are forced to notice it? I fought in just that way against the everlasting discipline. Which will make you strong, child? What was Mabella like as a child? What pressures shaped her? Life was always a reaction to pressures. Some gave in to easy distractions and were shaped by them. Paws bloated and reddened by excesses. Barkus leering at them. Lust fixing its shape on their features. A reverend mother knew it by millennial observation. We are shaped by pressures, whether we resist them or not. Pressures and shapings, that was life. And I create new pressures by my secret defiance. Given the sisterhood's present state of alertness to all threats, the hand talk with Duncan probably was futile. Shiana tipped her head and looked at the black blob on the sculpting stand. But I will persist. I will create my own statement of my life. I will create my own life. Damn the Bene Gesserit! And I will lose the respect of my sisters. There was something antique about the way respectful conformity was forced upon them. They had preserved this thing from their most ancient past, taking it out regularly to polish and make the necessary repairs that time required of all human creations. And here it was today, held in unspoken reverence. Thus you are a reverend mother, and by no other judgment shall that be true. Shiana knew then she would be forced to test that antique thing to its limits, probably breaking it. And that black plas form seeking outlet from the wild place within her was only one element of what she knew she had to do. Call it rebellion, call it by any other name. The force she felt in her breast could not be denied.
Confine yourself to observing, and you always miss the point of your own life. The object can be stated this way: live the best life you can. Life is a game whose rules you learn if you leap into it and play it to the hilt. Otherwise you are caught off balance, continually surprised by the shifting play. Non-players often whine and complain that luck always passes them by. They refuse to see that they can create some of their own luck. Darwi O'Drade.
Have you studied the latest Komai record of Idaho?
Belonda asked.
Later, later.
O'Drade knew she was feeling peckish, and it had come out in the response to Bell's pertinent question. Pressures confined the Mother Superior more and more these days. She'd always tried to face her duties with an attitude of broad interest. The more things to interest her, the wider her scan, and that was sure to bring more usable data. Using the senses improved them. Substance, that was what her questing interests desired. Substance. It was like hunting for food to assuage a deep hunger. But her days were becoming duplicates of this morning. Her liking for personal inspections was well known, but these workroom walls held her. She must be where she could be reached. Not only reached, but able to dispatch communications and people on the instant.
Damn, I will make the time. I must.
It was time pressure as much as anything. Shiana said,
"We trundle along on borrowed days."
Very poetic. Not much help in the face of pragmatic demands. They had to get as many Bene Gesserit cells as possible, scattered before the axe fell. Nothing else had that priority. The Bene Gesserit fabric was being torn apart, sent to destinations no one on Chapter House could know. Sometimes O'Drade saw this flow as rags and remnants. They went flapping away in their no-ships, a stock of sand trout in their holds, Bene Gesserit traditions, learning, and memories as guide. But the sisterhood had done this long ago in the first scattering, and none came back or sent a message. Not one. Not one. Only honored matres returned. And if they had ever been Bene Gesserit, they now were a terrible distortion, blindly suicidal.
Will we ever be whole again?
O'Drade looked down at the work on her table. More selection charts. Who shall go and who shall remain? There was little time to pause and take a deep breath. Other memory from her late predecessor Taraza took on an "I told you so" character. See what I had to go through?
And I once wondered if there was room at the top.
There might be room at the top, as she was fond of telling acolytes, but there was seldom enough time. When she thought of the largely passive, non-Bene Gesserit populace out there, O'Drade sometimes envied them. They were permitted their illusions. What a comfort. You could pretend your life was forever, that tomorrow would be better, that the gods in their heavens watched you with care. She recoiled from this lapse with disgust at herself. The unclouded eye was better, no matter what it saw.
I've studied the latest Idaho records, she said,
looking across the table at the patient Belonda.
He has interesting instincts, Belonda said.
O'Drade thought about that. Komais throughout the no-ship missed little. The Council's theory about Gola, Idaho became daily less a theory and more a conviction. How many memories from the serial Idaho lifetimes did this Gola contain?
Tam is raising doubts about their children, Belonda said. Do they have dangerous talents?
That was to be expected. The three children Mobella had born Idaho in the no-ship had been removed at birth. All were being observed with care as they developed. Did they have that uncanny, reactive speed honored matres displayed? Too early to say. It was a thing that developed in puberty, according to Mobella. Their captive, honored matre, accepted the removal of her children with angry resignation. Idaho, however, showed little reaction. Odd. Did something give him a broader view of procreation? Almost a Bene Gesserit view?
Another Bene Gesserit breeding program, he sneered.
O'Drade let her thoughts flow. Was it really the Bene Gesserit attitude they saw in Idaho? The sisterhood said emotional attachments were ancient detritus, important for human survival in their day but no longer required in the Bene Gesserit plan. instincts. Things that came with egg and sperm, often vital and loud. This is the species talking to you, dolt. Loves, offspring, hungers, all of those unconscious motives to compel specific behaviour. It was dangerous to meddle in such matters. The breeding mistresses knew this even while they did it. The council debated it periodically and ordered a careful watch on consequences.
You've studied the records. Is that all the answer I get?
Quite plaintive for Belonda. The Comai record of such interest to Bell was of Idaho questioning Mirbella about honored Matre's sexual addiction techniques. Why? His parallel abilities came from Tlelaxu conditioning impressed on his cells in the axolotl tank. Idaho's abilities originated as an unconscious pattern akin to instincts, but the result was indistinguishable from the honored Matre effect. Ecstasy amplified until it drove out all reason and bound its victims to the source of such rewards. Mirbella went only so far in a verbal exploration of her abilities. Obvious residual fury that Idaho had addicted her with the same techniques she had been taught to use.
Mirbella blocks up when Idaho questions motives, Belonda said.
Yes, I've seen that.
I could kill you and you know it, Mirbella had said.
The Comai record showed them in bed in Mirbella's no-ship quarters, having just satiated their mutual addiction. Sweat glistened on bare flesh. Mirbella lay with a blue towel across her forehead, green eyes staring up at the Comais. She appeared to be looking directly at the observers. Little orange flecks in her eyes. Anger flecks from her body's residual store of the spice substitute Honored Matres employed. She was on mélange now, and no adverse symptoms. Idaho lay beside her, black hair in disarray around his face, a sharp contrast to the white pillow beneath his head. His eyes were closed, but the lids flickered. Thin. He wasn't eating enough, despite tempting dishes sent by O'Drade's own chef. His high cheekbones were strongly defined. The face had become craggy in the years of his confinement. Mirbella's threat was backed by physical ability, O'Drade knew, but it was psychologically false. Kill her lover? Not likely. Belonda was thinking along these same lines.
What was she doing when she demonstrated her physical speed? We've seen that before.
She knows we watch.
The Comais showed Mirbella defying post-coital fatigue to leap from bed. Moving with blurred speed, much faster than anything the Bene Gesserit had ever achieved, she kicked out with her right foot, stopping the blow only a hair's breadth from Idaho's head. At her first movement, Idaho opened his eyes. He watched without fear, without flinching.
That blow, fatal if it struck.
You had only to see such a thing once to fear it. Mirbella moved with no resort to her central cortex. Insect-like, an attack triggered by nerves at the point of muscle ignition.
You see?
Mirbella lowered her foot and glared down at him. Idaho smiled. Watching it, O'Drade reminded herself that the sisterhood had three of Mirbella's children, all female. The breeding mistresses were excited. In time, reverend mothers born of this line might match that honored Matre ability.
In time we probably don't have.
But O'Drade shared the excitement of the breeding mistresses.
That speed.
Add that to the nerve-muscle training, the great Pranabindu resources of the sisterhood. What that might create lay wordlessly within her.
She did that for us, not for him, Belonda said.
O'Drade was not sure. Mirbella resented the constant watch over her, but she had come to an accommodation with it. Many of her actions obviously ignored the people behind the Comais. This record showed her returning to her place in the bed beside Idaho.
I have restricted access to that record, Belonda said. Some acolytes are becoming troubled.
O'Drade nodded.
Sexual addiction.
That aspect of Honored Matre abilities created disturbing ripples in the Bene Gesserit, especially among acolytes. Very suggestive. and most of the sisters on Chapter House knew the Reverend Mother Shiana, alone among them, practiced some of these techniques in defiance of a general fear this could weaken them.
"We must not become honored matres."
Bell was always saying that, but Shiana represents a significant control factor. She teaches us something about Mabella. One afternoon, catching Mabella alone in her no-ship quarters and obviously relaxed, Odraid had tried a direct question. "Before Idaho, were none of you ever tempted to, let us say, join in the fun?" Mabella had recoiled with angry pride.
"He caught me by accident."
The same kind of anger she showed to Idaho's questions. Remembering this, Odraid leaned over her work table and called up the original record.
"Look at how angry she gets," Belonda said. "A hypnotrance injunction against answering such questions. I'd stake my reputation on it."
"That'll come out in the spice agony," Odraid said.
"If she ever gets to it."
"Hypnotrance is supposed to be our secret." Belonda chewed on the obvious inference. No sister we sent out in the original scattering ever returned. It was written large in their minds. Did renegade Bene Gesserit create the honored matres? Much suggested it. Then why did they resort to sexual enslavement of males? Mabella's historical prattlings did not satisfy. Everything about this went against Bene Gesserit teaching.
"We have to learn," Belonda insisted. "What little we know is very disturbing."
Odraid recognized the concern. How much of a lure was this ability? Very big, she thought. Acolytes complained that they dreamed about becoming honored matres. Belonda was rightly worried. Create or arouse such unbridled forces and you built carnal fantasies of enormous complexity. You could lead whole populations around by their desires, by their fantasy projections. There was the terrible power the honored matres had dared use. Let it be known that they had the key to blinding ecstasy and they had won half the battle. The simple clue that such a thing existed, that was the beginning of surrender. People at Mabella's level in that other sisterhood might not understand this, but the ones at the top. Was it possible they merely used this power without caring or even suspecting its deeper force? If that were the case, how were our first scattered ones lured into this dead end? Earlier, Belonda had offered her hypothesis. Honored Matre with captive Reverend Mother taken prisoner in that first scattering.
"Welcome, Reverend Mother. We would like you to witness a small demonstration of our powers."
Interlude of sexual demonstration, followed by a display of Honored Matre physical speed. Then, withdrawal of melange and injection of the adrenaline-based substitute laced with a hypno drug. In that hypothetical trance, the Reverend Mother was sexually imprinted. That, coupled to the selective agony of melange withdrawal, Bell suggested, might make the victim deny her origins.
Fates help us. Were the original honored matres all Reverend Mothers? Do we dare test this hypothesis on ourselves? What can we learn of this from that pair in the no-ship?
Two sources of information lay there under the sisterhood's watchful eyes, but the key had yet to be found.
Women and man no longer just breeding partners, no longer a comfort and support to each other. Something new has been added. The stakes have been escalated.
In the Comai record playing at the work table, Mabella said something that caught the Mother Superior's full attention.
"We honored matres did this to ourselves. Can't blame anyone else." "You hear that?" Belonda demanded.
Odraid shook her head sharply, wanting all of her attention on this exchange.
"You can't say the same about me," Idaho objected.
"That's an empty excuse," Mabella accused. "So you were conditioned by the Tleilaxu to snare the first imprinter you encountered."
"And to kill her," Idaho corrected. "That's what they intended."
"But you didn't even try to kill me. Not that you could have."
"That's when—"
Idaho broke off with an involuntary glance at the recording Comeyes.
"What was he about to say there?" Belonda pounced. "We must find out."
But Odraid continued her silent observation of the captive pair. Mabella demonstrated a surprising insight.
You think you caught me through some accident in which you were not involved?
Exactly.
But I see something in you that accepted all of it. You didn't just go along with your conditioning. You performed to your limits.
An inward look filmed Idaho's eyes. He tipped his head back, stretching his chest muscles.
That's a mentat expression, Belonda accused.
All of O'Drade's analysts suggested this, but they had yet to wrest an admission from Idaho. If he was a mentat, why withhold that information?
Because of the other things implied by such abilities. He fears us, and rightly so.
Mobella spoke with a sneer.
You improvised and improved on what the Tlelaxu did to you. There was something in you that made no complaint whatsoever.
That's how she deals with her own guilt feelings, Belonda said. She has to believe it's true or Idaho would not have been able to trap her.
O'Drade pursed her lips. The projection showed Idaho amused.
Perhaps it was the same for both of us.
You can't blame the Tlelaxu, and I can't blame the Honored Matres.
Tamerlane entered the workroom and sank into her chair dog beside Belonda.
I see it has your interest, too.
She gestured at the projected figures. O'Drade shut down the projector.
I've been inspecting our axolotl tanks, Tamerlane said. That damned Cytale has withheld vital information.
There's no flaw in our first go, is there?
Belonda demanded.
Nothing our souks can find.
O'Drade spoke in a mild tone.
Cytale has to keep some bargaining chips.
Both sides shared a fantasy. Cytale was paying the Bene Gesserit for rescue from the Honored Matres and sanctuary on Chapter House, but every reverend mother who studied him knew something else drove the last Tlelaxu master.
Clever. Clever, the Bene Tlelax. Far more clever than we suspected. And they have dirted us with their axolotl tanks. The very word, tank, another of their deceptions. We pictured containers of warmed amniotic fluid, each tank the focus of complex machinery, to duplicate in a subtle, discreet, and controllable way the workings of the womb. The tank is there, all right, but look at what it contains.
The Tlelaxu solution was direct. Use the original. Nature already had worked it out over the eons. All the Bene Tlelax need do was add their own control system, their own way of replicating information stored in the cell.
The language of God,
Cytale called it.
Language of Shaitan was more appropriate.
Feedback. The cell directed its own womb. That was more or less what a fertilized ovum did anyway. The Tlelaxu merely refined it. A sigh escaped O'Drade, bringing sharp glances from her companions.
Does Mother Superior have new troubles? Cytale's revelations trouble me, and what those revelations have done to us. Oh, how we recoiled from the debasement, then rationalizations. And we knew they were rationalizations. If there is no other way, if this produces the Golas we need so desperately, volunteers probably can be found. Were found. Volunteers.
You're wool-gathering,
Tamerlane grumbled. She glanced at Belonda, started to say something, and thought better of it. Belonda's face went soft, bland, a frequent accompaniment to her darker moods. Her voice came out little more than a guttural whisper.
I strongly...